we'll just plug him in when he gets here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Cult of Gracie Radio on XXDN in Raleigh, North Carolina. And tonight our guests are, well, the late DJ Ashba and the on-time James Michael from 6 a.m. I guess we'll start with you, James, since you're here.
We have no choice but to start with me, do we?
Well, we could, but I have a feeling it would slow things down. One of the things that intrigued me about 6 a.m. is that this is like a band that wasn't a band, right?
Yeah, I mean, when we got together to write and make the record, we had no intention of being a band. This was simply going to be a studio project, you know, three friends that all happened to be songwriters and producers getting together and just doing this project. And it wasn't really until about three quarters of the way through the making of the record when we had started turning in some songs that people at the label and at management started, you know, kind of reacting and going, boy, we might have a shot at something here. We might be able to get some radio play out of this. So we really did not even think about being a band or going out and touring or anything like that until the music and the reaction from people kind of dictated it.
And so you had to go out and find a drummer, it was, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just the three of us as far as the band goes, Nikki, DJ, and myself. And so for every, you know, we haven't done a lot of performances, but for everything we've done so far, we've had a different drummer just because we haven't really, you know, even thought it through to the point where we need to get a regular drummer. So for the first video that we shot for Life is Beautiful, we had a guy, Bones, doing the drums on that. And then we did a press conference about a year ago and had a different drummer for that. And yeah, so everything that we've done, we've had a different drummer. We kind of have settled in on Tony Palermo, who's also Papa Roach's drummer. So he'll be drumming with us this summer.
Now, you guys are going on tour with Papa Roach then, so this guy's going to have to, like, jump from set to set?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, so is Nikki. Nikki will be playing bass with us, and then he'll also be playing with Motley. So, yeah, it's all in the family, you know?
Now, the other thing that was really interesting to me is that you were a band without a band, and it's also a soundtrack without a movie.
Yeah, you know, I mean, originally when Nikki and I started talking about his diaries about 5 or 6 years ago, you know, it lent itself to such a visual thing that I think that we always thought of it as being a movie. Even before he decided to publish the book as, you know, as a series of journal entries. So just the story itself was very visual. And in fact, when DJ and myself and Nikki sat down and started writing the songs for it, you know, we had these movies already in our head. And it wasn't until, you know, we were well into the making of it that we just kind of decided, you know, this is, even though there's not a movie now, this really would be a great soundtrack to a book, and nobody's ever done that before. And so even though we kind of in our minds were making it for a movie, it ended up being the soundtrack to the book.
Oh, well, it looks like DJ's shown up here, so I'm going to click him on.
Better late than never, huh?
Well,
yeah,
that
depends
on
who you
ask.
We have DJ here.
How are you?
Hi,
hey, DJ.
Welcome to the show. James,
why, hi,
assures
James.
Me. James assures me you're late because you're the guitarist. Is that how that works?
Yeah. No, I found this new site where webcam is like you can just cruise different people's thing and check out webcam. So.
Well, I'm going to remind people once again that we're listening to Cult of Gracie on XXBN in Raleigh, North Carolina. If anyone has any questions, they can call in at 646-200-3136. DJ, we were just talking about that you originally were a band without a band, and we were just discussing now that the Heroin Diaries soundtrack was a soundtrack to a non-existent movie that it was a soundtrack to a book.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add to that?
That's pretty much it. I mean, I just remember in the writing process, you know, I mean, if this were a movie, I think Nikki, I mean, like when we were writing some of these songs, he painted very vivid pictures of how he saw the movie opening. You know, so I think, you know, I think that kind of helped the writing process, definitely reading the diaries and kind of getting a visual, you know, trying to dig inside of his head. And you know, I remember one day he drove us by the, or he drove me past the heroin house where he used to live in Van Nuys and stuff, and pretty creepy, just got a real good feel of it before we kind of dove in with the writing process.
And what was that like? I mean, you guys are younger, right?
Yeah, I'm 17.
How old are you? 17? And
yeah.
Which was that? Was that James or DJ?
No, I'm 13.
Yes. Oh, great. Then you're on the wrong network. As you missed before in the green room chat, so to speak, James and I were discussing that XXBN is a Swap East project, and Swap East is a sex workers outreach project. This is our media project. So, you know, a 13-year-old's on the air with us, probably not a good thing.
I'm mature for 13, though, so it's good.
Oh, yeah, well, no ID, no getting on the ride. It's kind of like Disney. But being younger, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, just being younger than Nikki, I mean, was there any sense of starstruck, or was there a wake-up call for you guys being involved in a project about heroin addiction and recovery?
Well, I think, you know, any time that you know somebody as well as we know Nikki, and they've been through that type of thing, it's startling. It's startling to have a friend that's gone through that. I don't think that any of it has anything to do with us being younger, or you know, age has never really played an issue at all in any of this. It's really just been about, you know, getting to know somebody who has struggled through that type of thing. And I think that, you know, when we sat down and read the diaries for the first time, it was a different experience for both of us, and probably much different for us because we're friends with Nikki than it would have been for, you know, just a fan or somebody reading the diaries. For us, it's like you read some of that stuff and you're just like, man, it's just, I can't believe that my friend went through this. You know, it's not like, oh, man, I can't believe that rock star went through it. So it's a much more personal experience.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things is I was telling your publicist, I'm like probably too old to be doing this interview. I'm so not cool. I'm 43, and I remember Nikki and Motley Crue finally had all the vinyl, and I won't describe my hair at the time. We'll save us all that. But, you know, it was kind of growing up with Nikki, and so to hear him come out on the other side, not only free, but to be so vocal about it and share things that are completely unflattering, there's a maturity there that only makes Nikki hotter, so you can pass that on. But, you know,
that's been the thing about Nikki. He has built his entire career on not bullshitting people, you know,
yeah.
on just exposing himself and you know, all the good with the bad. He's always been that way. He has never been one to try to sugarcoat his image or any of his bandmates' image. And I think that that's what the fans have fallen in love with over the entire long career that he's had and continues to have, is that they appreciate the fact that they get what they get with him. They're not getting some polished, marketed bullshit.
Exactly.
Well, and as a woman, when I was a young woman listening to that, and I still see it in older women, but I like to believe only the younger ones do this. As you musicians know, I'm sure you're aware of the mystique of the musician, of the artist, and the bad boy rocker image versus there's that, you know, I'm the one in the audience. I'm the only one who can see the tender, sweet, hurt, let me go save inside. That's why you guys always have that one ballad on a rock album that lures us in like, you know, a shining lure in the water. And I guess when I saw and read a lot of the truth, I haven't read all of the diaries, I will admit that, but what I have read, the excerpts I've read, it sort of fed my old girl crushes of, you know, the old could have saved him. Now, obviously, that's bigger than any one person. It's up to him. But I really have to say that musically, what I've listened to of the soundtrack really portrayed a lot of that for me, looking back, thinking of comparing the attractive to the unattractive and the underside to the reality.
Right, right.
And you're new. Now you have new stuff out that you're going to be. Is it an album or just for the tour?
Well, we just have the Heroin Diaries soundtrack out, which, geez, that's been out for what, DJ, almost a year now? And
yeah.
The first single, Life is Beautiful, is just still going strong on the charts. I mean, we've shot three videos for three different songs, but Life is Beautiful, the very first single, is still out there, you know. And so, all you know, we haven't even really released our second single officially yet, just because the first one is still going.
What was it, like a month ago it went number one?
Yeah, so it just, it,
know,
so
sorry.
Even though it seems like, yeah, we've got new material out there, we're, you know, I think that we'll be working this the Heroin Diaries soundtrack for quite some time, you know, and thanks to the fans and thanks to the success that it's having at radio, and then, of course, thanks to this, the Crew Fest tour that we're going to be doing this summer with all of these great bands, you know, 6 a.m. is going to be out there making waves and hopefully making new fans and kind of spreading the word for a while now.
And you guys are like the baby on the tour, right?
In what respect?
we're going back to the legal issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't call a 13-year-old a baby.
Well, I mean, there's, you guys are the youngest.
We are a brand new band, but what's great about it is the response that Nikki's received off the book, and you know, even the response we've seen off just the music has been so overwhelming, you know, and people have been, you know, kind of, you know, hitting us up on MySpace websites, whatever, to see this band live for quite some time, to where now the demand has been so intense that, you know, there's almost like, all right, you know, there's no kind of, you know, denying the fact that, you know, it's like, okay, I think it's time we go out and bring this thing to life on stage, you know, so I think we're all excited to be out there. I don't mind being the underdog band. It's going to be a fun time.
Now, is this the first time you guys have toured, or because I'll admit my celebrity stalking status is pretty low. Is this the first time you guys have toured or done anything like Crew Fest?
No, this will be the first time that we've toured together as a band. Each of us have you know, had other bands that we've worked with, but this will, you know, especially for a group of guys that just never thought that this was even going to be a band, you know, it's certainly...
Yeah.
It's certainly a new experience for us to be getting out there as this band and doing this, and a fun one at that.
So is it kind of like taking the project from, you know, like Dad's garage to the stage?
I guess kind of.
Can you tell I'm not around musicians an awful lot?
No, I just Dad's garage. Yeah, I guess so. I guess it is. Yeah.
I mean, it was a very personal project.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But it wasn't done with the intention of being the marketed product. It was an exploration.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that was something that was, you know, that was a little bit, that caused a little bit of anxiety in all of us. We just didn't know. We never wrote this record for the stage. You know, it's very theatrical and it's a very dramatic record, but we never intended to have to perform it live, so... back in October of last year, we ended up opening up for Korn up in Salt Lake City and you know, to a big show. And we were all a bit apprehensive because we just didn't know. Number one, we were playing for a very, you know, the Korn audience, which, you know, Korn is a very heavy band, and we just didn't know how this music was going to be received. So that was a little bit nerve-wracking, and fortunately, it was received incredibly well. The audience was really, really into it. Of course, it didn't hurt that Life is Beautiful was the number one song in that market at the time. But the other thing that was kind of nerve-wracking for us is that we just didn't know how these songs were going to come off live. You know, they're very theatrical songs. And, you know, we have songs like Dead Man's Ballet that it starts off very mellow with piano and then gets really, really heavy and has like a big choir going on and stuff. So... I think that we were all just kind of wondering how that was going to go, and fortunately it went well, and we had a blast, and we kind of proved to ourselves that we could take this thing on the road.
Well, that kind of reminds me of, you know, speaking as an old escort, yeah, there's a lot of experience with taking the fantasy and the private to suddenly at showtime, and that is trickier, because a lot of things are in your head, or that can be, carefully constructed, you know, in a studio.
I would have drawn that exact same comparison about the S word. In fact, I'm going to. Do you mind if I use that comparison from now on?
As long as somewhere I get a quarter or my name mentioned, because once a whore, always a whore. So.
Of course.
Just make sure I get a plug. Say Gracie Bissett says.
yeah, if you know what I mean.
What up, wake nuts, yeah. Completely off track now.
This is hurting my young ears.
Well, you said you were mature 13, so we're going with that.
I'm more mature now.
Yeah.
Is your daddy and mommy with you while you're on the air, honey?
Yeah, DJ, I'll explain the whole plug thing later.
You got it.
You might need illustrations. So what's it like now? You have, what's it called, Pray For Me, right? Pray For Me?
Pray For Me, yeah.
Yes.
Is that the second single that's sort
that
of coming out
now? That is the
second
single, yes.
I watched that video over and over again. I got to tell you, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is cool, this is hot. The second time I was scared. The third, you know, I mean, it's like it keeps changing. There's like layers there.
Right.
So tell me, was I supposed to be hot and scared at the same time, or?
We were just going for hot, but we'll take scared.
It works
like
for the horror movies.
Well, yeah, I think the intention was just, to make something that was kind of visually intriguing, but also provoked thought, and the subject matter of that in and of itself is. It can be confusing, and that song can be taken a lot of different ways, and we wanted to leave it up to the listener to kind of draw their own conclusions about it, and I think that video probably means something different to each one of us.
Yeah.
Oh, what an artist answer.
I know. I'm running for a political office.
Quick, some hand of a baby to kiss.
Angela Taylor looked great in it.
Yeah, no comments there. Certainly couldn't argue that. So what's the contrast like now between when you, because you've had success with the first single, do you have expectations for the second song coming out? Do you think it'll achieve the same attention?
You know what? We don't even really care, to be honest. I mean, we never thought we would ever see a song hit radio with an album called The Heroin Diaries. I mean, you know, at the beginning, Targets would not carry it. Everybody, because of the name, they were scared. And then once they actually took the time to understand that, you know, there is a positive message, you know, within the storyline, you know, now Target's like the number one seller for the album, and you know, TV has been very responsive to it. So, but we've never had expectations, you know, since day one. It was more of an artistic album, I think.
But now that you've had some success with it, I mean, are you at least curious to see?
Well,
a little.
Yeah, I guess, but the funny thing is that, you know, about 6 months ago, when we kind of anticipated that Life is Beautiful would kind of start falling back down the charts, it just didn't, and it got to the point where we don't even pay attention to what the charts are doing. I mean, every once in a while we'll get a call saying, you know, it's really weird, guys, but Life is Beautiful is climbing back up again. You know, you got your bullet back, and it's like, at some point, honestly, you just kind of, you can't pay too much attention to that stuff, because the worst thing you can do is start watching that like, you know, like the stock market, because as soon as things start slipping, you start going, oh, people don't love me anymore, and it's like, you just can't, you can't get yourself into that. Now, if your original intention was to climb the charts and have that kind of success, then I guess you couldn't help but to, you know, to watch the charts, but it really just isn't about that. I know it sounds like a cliche, and I know that all bands say, oh, we don't really care, but honestly, we don't. What's really cool for us is when we get emails or something saying, you know, my daughter or my son has been on drugs, and you know, we've read Nikki's book, and we've listened to your soundtrack, and it's really helping us get some focus back in our lives and get cleaned up. That's awesome. That's, you know, that means that work that we did sitting here writing the record is paying off.
Yeah.
What intrigued me about Pray For Me is if I wouldn't have known the project, if I wouldn't have known the history, and I just listened to that song, you know, the the types of interpretations are, like you said, rather endless with that song.
Right.
So, you know, they stand on their own, but when you know the background story to them, they have a different significance.
Right.
Right, right.
And well, do you have a favorite song? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, DJ. Do you have a favorite song?
You know what, this is one album, and this is as honest as I can be. I've recorded a lot of albums, and this is the only album that's still in my car, and I'm really proud of it because it's something that I can't pick a favorite, and I think that's what's so cool about it. You know, and, you know, the fans email me every day, they all have different favorites. I think, you know, these songs touch people in so many different ways, and I think that's probably the reason it's still in my car and not a coffee coaster, you know. You know, so many songs do so many things for me personally, you know.
Right.
Outside
I used to take a lot of my old projects and make them coffee coasters, too. So we have that in common.
All right, DJ, I've got an interesting question for you. Rather than the, do you have a favorite song? If you had, if you could play one song off of the record for somebody, which song would that be? Like, if you wanted to in one song explain to people or show people what this record was all about, what song would it be?
Jeez. Oh, there's so many. I mean, obviously, I love playing Life is Beautiful. I mean, but I love, like, songs like Van Nuys. I love, you know, Accidents is probably one of my top favorite ones just because, you know, I love how, you know, without being gay, but James, I just love listening to it because I called Nikki last night and I had to get out of the studio and I was driving around for like an hour and I hadn't listened to the album for quite a while and I popped it in and just cranked the fuck out of it. And I actually had to call him and I just had goosebumps, you know, I was like, fuck, the emotion that James has in his vocals and you know, I still get goosebumps listening to it.
You cry?
What? I almost
cried.
I did shed one tear.
He's only 13.
I know.
Kids cry easily.
But without, you know, I don't want to sound conceited in any way. I'm just saying I'm very proud of really, you know, it's definitely something that's close to, I know, all three of us, and we've really put our heart and soul into it.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to guys put a pin in it right now because we got a caller on the line.
Uh-oh. Is it Nikki?
I don't know. We're going to wait and see. Drum roll. Area code 919. You're on the air live with 6 a.m. Got a question?
I just don't think these guys are really 13.
Hi, Jill. This is Jill from Swap East.
Hi, no, it's not Jill. This is Captain Planet. I don't know who Jill is.
You know, I have to say, you sounded a little bit disappointed about that, actually.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Do you have any questions, Captain Planet?
No.
You're acting as the vice squad, saying that you don't think they're 13?
Well, I'm just suspicious of the whole thing. I've never been part of a cult before, and there are 13-year-olds with very deep voices that I remember when I was, like, 16 and...
They mature quickly in the cult.
Jeez.
Fair enough. I can't argue with that.
Like, ding, ding, ding. What do we have for, Johnny? Yes, we are not 13.
Now you can guess our weight.
No.
Oh,
well,
no.
I'm glad you took the time to call in.
Well, thank you for taking
and clear that up for us.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. So.
Dude, that was freakier than writing the album.
That was pretty creepy.
No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to tell you it was my other personality, but since you're already spooked, we'll just save that. So what about you, James? You picked DJ apart and asked him to if you could title one example as the...
Yeah,
what
song would make you shed a tear if you had to sing for someone?
Well, you see, that's different. If I had to sing it, then I'd pick one that was easy to sing when there's not very many that are easy to sing.
Exactly.
But if I were to pick a song that I think kind of covered all of the bases of the Heroin Diaries in one song, I think it would be Dead Man's Ballet. Just because, you know, it's such a dramatic song, and it has the kind of soft, intimate moment, and then it has the real heavy, kind of frightening.
You know, one
moment.
Of my favorites is "Courtesy Call." That song is a really
yeah. That's a pretty cool one too.
Every time you know, it gets to the middle part, I shed a tear. I get a little goosebumpy.
You're so sensitive.
I am.
You're really
well,
sensitive.
That's why we're good. Yeah. Well.
Is that why he was late? Going through mood swings or something that we don't
yeah.
know about?
Yeah, I was opening up a box of Kleenex.
How does Nicky feel about the album? I mean, is he also a surprise to you guys?
I think he is.
Do you guys, as an individual or as a group, I mean, have you pinpointed where, aside from the creativity and the quality of the project itself, where do you think the push comes, that where it keeps going up to number one and then comes back up again? Where, since it wasn't a marketing miracle, it wasn't constructed to be, a pop
you know what? It's,
thing.
It's kind
it's
of
all the underground porn sites we keep.
Right, exactly. No, I think that all three of us being songwriters by profession and having had to make our living at it for many years, that's the age-old question. If we could tell you that, if we could answer that, give you a clear answer on why, then we'd all be a million times richer than we are, because nobody really knows, other than the fact that you can guess and say, well, I think it's because this particular song or this particular story connected with people on a very core level, and that's obviously true that is something that's happening. But to pinpoint why it just the song won't go away is it's impossible to do, really.
I mean, we've been writing songs since we were little, but I think out of all the many years that we've been writing, I think from a songwriter, obviously nobody knows the formula, obviously, but I think it just comes down to being as true as you possibly can to yourself and to the song. And I think if you're sitting there writing a song and you honestly have fucking goosebumps and you're like, holy shit, and you just know. It's a feeling inside. You don't know if it's going to do well outside, but I think that's the feeling we all three had when we wrote this album, and especially when we came up with Life is Beautiful. I think we sat back and we're going, holy shit, this, I don't know.
I think that for the writing of the entire record, the one thing that we were very mindful of was we wanted every single song to have a sense of hope, and that was especially important because the subject matter was so heavy and dark, and this could have very easily been a very depressing and dark record. And we needed, as the songwriters that were kind of taking this subject matter and shining a light on it, we wanted to find the positive and the hopeful in every single song. And I think that because, without that, then a listener doesn't have any desire or reason to go back and listen to it again. So I think that especially on Life is Beautiful, that really came across. Life is Beautiful was originally going to be called Funeral. And I think that lyrically it was originally going to focus more on the dark side of it. And we all kind of sat there and thought, you know what? I just don't think that there's enough of a purpose for this song if all we're going to do is focus on the dark and the death.
Yeah.
Let's focus on the hopefulness. Let's focus on the recovery. And I think that really kind of became a guide for the whole record and all of the songs, be it Heart Failure or Girl with Golden Eyes, which is about heroin. We tried to find the beauty and the heroicness and the success story in every song.
This reminds me of a contrast here, but I'm sure you know of Tracy Chapman.
Sure.
When she first came out, I was trying to get my sister to go to the concert with me. She appeared in town, and my sister said no. And I said, well, I'm going to still go then. And she said that was the most depressing, suicidal thing she'd ever heard, of someone going alone to a Tracy Chapman concert. Her music is not offering quite the hope that the Heroin Diaries offers. It is just sad story after sad story, so alone wouldn't have been a good idea.
Right.
But But the reason I asked the question about the success is because I have to wonder if part of the success of the project would be because of things like the Internet and YouTube, just because of the viral sharing, but the context that people are able to immediately find the song, find the connection, you know, find the excerpt and immediately make connections.
That was like, you know, 95% the Internet. I mean, I think it was definitely a viral thing to where people just started talking about it. I mean, MySpace went way out of their way, and they really got behind it for us. And I think, you know, that had a lot to do with, you know, that's why it was on the charts, I believe, for 9 months, right, James, before it hit number one?
I think so.
Slowly, gradual, you know, just everything happened, you know, kind of.
But also, that being said, and that's very, what DJ just said is absolutely true, and your question, you know, alluded to a real fact about this. But what also is important to recognize in this is that the record label had all of this in their plan, and they were patient enough to allow this to happen, and that's very rare, because a lot of record companies to this day will you know, do their initial push at radio, and either it goes, and in most cases it doesn't go, and they give up because they just don't know what else to do. And that's the great thing about 11-7 Records and Alan Kovac, is that he taught everyone how to be patient and how to let this stuff happen and let people discover the record and the band. And, you know, there's really something to be said for that, because I think that is really the way that labels are going to have to approach things in the future. You can't just throw a band at radio and hope it goes. Because if it doesn't, then what are you going to do? You're just going to abandon the band? Well, that's not developing, you know, art anymore. That's simply commerce. There's no art in that. So yeah, the Internet has played a huge role, and you know, the patience of the label to allow this to happen and not give up on it has been a real factor.
Well, I think that's the fascinating thing about this, is that it was an art project, not a commercialized plan. So the discovery of it and people wanting it so much is the context, the story, you know, the individual stories in each track, not that, oh, I have to have it now because it's number one, that it lives on longer because of the power of the work, not just because it was given this timeline push and then it's dropped.
Right.
So what songs are going to be next in video? Do you know?
We've shot three videos. We shot a video for Accidents Can Happen, which is the ballad on the record. And that was actually going to be our second single, but we've kind of switched it around. So that one is kind of sitting there ready to go. It's actually been getting, you know, a lot of television, you know, plays already. But I would imagine that we're just going to hold off on that as a single for a little bit, because Pray For Me is kind of starting to get out there and make a buzz.
Really,
I'm not sure.
That's a really powerful video. That's still, like, twisting my head. Well, you know, it's like you're watching, you're listening to it, you know, and then you're drawn into it, and after a while, you know, you're caught up in the visual story and the words, and you're, you know, like I said, I listened to it several times. It's like, no, I'm supposed to be listening, leave the room, but I want to go see. You know, it's a very compelling project on its own.
Cool.
I really like the word project.
One thing that amazes me is, you know, is all the many, you know, like homemade videos that are up on YouTube that these fans are putting together for all the songs. You know, one night I sat there for literally hours watching these homemade videos, and they really go all out, and it's really something, the support that this band's getting from all the fans out there. It's really incredible.
Well, I think that would speak to the quality of the songs. I mean, that people want to interpret them or, you know, or display them based on what it meant to them. That speaks more than, you know, an average bubblegum snappy song.
Right.
I want to have to let people know that this is Cult of Gracie Radio on XXBN from Raleigh, Carolina. If anyone has a question for DJ or James from 6 a.m., you should give us a call at 646-200-3136.
or if you just want to call in and guess our age again, that would be fine too.
We'll do weights next. We could do other sizes. I bet a lot of our listeners would be much better at guessing other measurements if you'd be interested in that. Oh, like a lead balloon, that one goes over. So.
Well, no, we're just all kind of at a loss for words.
It's not your usual radio interview, is it?
No.
You could tell me your story of your childhood if you'd prefer, if that'd be more comfortable.
Well, DJ's has only been 13 years, so we can start with that.
Musical influences. So if this is, so far, you know, I mean, this has been one soundtrack out for about a year, still not, you know, not just climbing, but capturing a lot of interest and discussion about it, and you're going on tour this summer, is there going to be another project, or are you just going to sort of let 6 a.m. be the Heroin Diaries soundtrack, and that's that?
You good?
No, I mean, there's been a lot of talk, just because of the response we got on Heroin Diaries, that, you know, when we get out on tour, you know, we're definitely, I believe, planning on, you know, starting to write the next record. And, you know, it's, you know, if it happens, you know, obviously it's something I hope it happens. You know, I'm excited about, you know, diving deeper into the world of, you know, the kind of music that we created. The one cool thing about 6 a.m., like James mentioned, when I first got on, you know, the soundtrack to a book thing has never really been done. But I believe we kind of created a very unique sound, in, which is really hard to do nowadays, just with all the orchestra and the narration and just the way it's all kind of put together, which was kind of an accident. But I sit back and listen, and you can definitely tell a 6 a.m. song when you hear it, and I think that's what I kind of like about the project the most is, you know, coming out the other end sounding, you know, different than every other band out there, which I really think is cool.
Do you think it will, you know, there's a crowd.
What were you laughing about there? Were you laughing about coming out the other end?
Yeah.
He's 13, those things still amuse him.
Yes, they do.
Say booger and see what happens. But
see?
You have a sound and you have a band, but originally, you know, the 6 a.m. was conceived on an idea, on a project. So to try to turn that project into a band, even though you have a sound, I mean, that won't that change things if you're not working from that same point of view?
Unfortunately, no. It's really bizarre. I mean, when we first sat down to start writing songs for the new Crew album, actually what, James, like the first three songs sounded just like 6 a.m. songs. So we're still kind of in the mode of writing 6 a.m. Like when me, James, and Nikki get in a room, it's very natural for us to sound like 6 a.m. because it's just naturally what came out. So it took us a second to shift gears and into the writing of the Motley record, you know.
Right, and if what you're asking is will it be a different experience not having the book and Nikki's story to tell, you know, when this band sits down to do something else, I think the answer is yeah, it will be a different experience. But I think the fact that, you know, the one thing that we established very early on with this band is that there are no rules about this band. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, 6 a.m. does definitely have a sound, you know, there's no telling what the next thing we do will be like, you know. I mean, certainly there will be identifiable things, but, you know, who knows where our heads will be at that time and what subject matter we decide to talk about, you know. Whatever it will be, it's going to be important to us, and we won't do it unless it is important to us.
Right.
So it could be about hookers. You don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping.
That's in the top five.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards that. God knows I'm dated enough. No, I'm just kidding.
You won't get hate mail
from us.
The ex-girlfriends will be the ones who will flood you.
No, I'm just kidding.
So what's it like now to head out on the road and take this live and know that Nikki's going to be going back and forth and your drummer's going to be going back and forth? How's that feel? I mean, do you still feel like a group, or do you kind of feel like rented out boys?
It's never felt like a group to us. It's more just, I get a jam every night with two of my best friends, and it's always going to be like that in 6 a.m., and I don't know. I mean, I don't look at it that way, you know.
Yeah, I would say the exact same thing. Yeah, it's. I mean, even though, yes, we are officially now a band, it's just a bunch of guys that like hanging out and doing stuff, you know, doing it together and being able to do it on the road and, you know, and make music, which is what we all do. I mean, for as important as this project is to all of us, it is something that we all kind of did as a labor of love and you know, quite frankly, as a side project. And the fact that it's turned into something has made us all kind of stop and look at it and go, oh, man, this is so cool. But again, we never set out to do this as a band. This is just three guys that like making music together that did it. And you know, the result has made us all kind of adjust what our plans were. You know, we didn't plan on going out on tour and doing this, but it's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
So how long did you know Nikki before you started the project?
I've known Nikki for maybe eight or 9 years now. We were I had a solo deal on the label that he was on back in the late 90s, that's how we met. So I've known him for about maybe 7, 8, 9 years now.
And I've known him probably for about 5 years. He actually called me at one point to join the Brides thing. And I was busy at the time, but then we really got to hang out quite a bit during the, you know, like the Red, White, and Crew era. And then, I was about ready to sign another deal with a different band, and he approached me to kind of team up with them and blah, 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 and the rest is...
Blah, blah, blah. Great radio interview.
You know,
I feel like I've said it so many times, people know exactly what I'm going to say, so I don't want to bore
anybody. But the story that I love about how you and Nikki met, DJ, was that you guys met at a funeral. I mean, how perfect could it be?
Yeah, we did. We actually, the first time we actually met was at Randy Castillo's funeral. So, yeah.
So that's sort of like foreshadowing and whatnot, huh?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, we're standing here at a funeral, and in a few years we're going to be writing about how you didn't have to go to mine.
Hey.
Now, was it, I don't know anything about musicians' lives, you know, do you guys, when you know each other as musicians, but then you come together on a project like this, and it is so focused on one person's story,
mm-hmm.
you know, how does that work?
Well, I think any time that you know, more than one songwriter gets together with people in a room to write songs, it's based on shared experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas Nikki's, you know, life and his story was certainly the inspiration for everything that we did during the making of that record, we all brought our own personal experiences into the record, both in lyrics and in music. And I think that you know, that's just what we naturally do. Anytime the two writers get together to write a song, they're having to kind of pool their personal experiences and their emotional experiences together in order to create something that can then be, you know, universally believed. So it wasn't as hard as one might think. In fact, in some ways it was easier because you always had the guidelines of a story to tell. You know, whereas sometimes if two guys get together to write a song and they have no focus, you know, they might sit down today and say, hey, let's write a ballad, or let's write a song about sex, or let's write a song about this or that. We already had that. We always had the Heroin Diaries to fall back on. And if we ever got stuck, we'd be like, well, let's just flip through these pages and see what's going on here at this point in the story. And maybe that would inspire something. So I think that it was actually very helpful in some ways. The one thing that could have potentially been problematic or a challenge was to have us exposing the personal life of our friend, you know, But that's where Nicky was so willing to do that. He never felt the need to cover things up or sugarcoat anything, and that made it actually easier for us because we were simply just telling stories about things that went on in his life.
So did the soundtrack, was that going on while Nicky was writing, or was it a one then the other?
While he was writing the diaries?
Yeah.
To an extent, yeah. I think that he actually a few of the songs were written, you know, several years ago. In fact, when Nicky and I first started talking about it, 5 or 6 years ago now, when he had just kind of come back across his diaries, and we said, "Wow, wouldn't it be cool to do some type of soundtrack?" We actually started doing some writing back then for it. So it's been a long, long process, you know. And we'd work on it for a while, and then he'd, you know, do the Motley stuff, and then there would be a long period of time where it didn't. And really, the whole record, even though it had been conceptualized several years before, it didn't really come into focus until DJ and Nicky started working together, and that's when, you know, that's when the two of them really sat down and started focusing on, you know, let's do this, let's make this happen. And then shortly after, they called me and said, "Hey, remember that Heroin Diaries thing? Well, we're going to do it." And so
it didn't take that long because DJ was just late for everything.
Exactly.
Man, I was 2 minutes late. It's only because I was like at peekaboo on your site, and that's the only reason.
Sure. Uh huh. Yeah. Well, you know, for girls, 2 minutes late means a lot. Of course, it's better than 2 weeks late, but that's another situation.
Oh, geez, yeah. It just took a dark turn.
Yeah, I about puked a little.
Well, I want to make sure I usually do some post-show notes for listeners, because this is going to be able to be downloaded, and it goes to iTunes and whatnot. Are there any websites besides 6AM's website that you want pushed? Do you each have your own website?
Absolutely.
DJ's got a killer website.
Okay, give us the URL so I can type it up later.
ashbaland.com. And then they could also visit ashbamedia.com. And then James has a killer site, too.
Oh, so, I don't know about that.
I know, cause I helped him.
You always have to ask the 13-year-olds to help with websites because they're the best.
We're both actually, me, James, and I believe Nikki, too, are all three launching brand new sites before the 1st of July. So
yeah.
Everybody can look forward to that.
Okay, and will those all be linked from the 6AM site?
Yeah, they'll all be able to link to them from that site.
Mm-hmm. And James' site is what?
Well, mine is jamesmichael.net.
All righty.
And
does Crewfest have a website, or?
I know they're promoting at heavyandmotley.com, and or you can go to nikki6.net. It's on there too.
Yeah. All right. Well, is there anything else you guys want to say aside from how completely generic this interview has been for you?
No, I think that we should just all gather together and sing DJ a little lullaby because it's past his bedtime.
I would love that.
You don't want me to sing.
Rockabye.
Okay, wait, James. I want to hear her sing Life is Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, sing Life is Beautiful.
You don't want to hear me sing anything.
I've
got a dog, and he will howl.
Is that code word?
In my line of work, I make other people sing. I don't actually do the singing.
That sounded like some type of sex kitten code word. I've got a dog and he will howl.
Wow, you really were. You were like stalking me. I don't know whether to be flattered or instantly go change my IP address. But well, I really appreciate you guys coming on and talking about that, about the concert and about the project. The Heroin Diaries soundtrack is incredible, and I can't say enough about the Pray For Me song and the video. Don't watch it late at night, last thing before bed, is my only word of caution. it may keep you up at night.
Well, thank you very much for having us on. It's been fun talking with you.
Well, thanks a lot, and good luck on the tour. Perhaps I will see you at Crewfest.
Everyone come out and see Crewfest. It's going to rock.
Definitely.
I'll make sure I hold up something about 13-year-old DJ and that, and then you'll know it's
Yeah, I'll be the drunk, naked guy running down the field happily.
Now you know that at any given show there will be somebody holding up a DJ's 13 sign just from listening to this.
That's great.
Exactly. There's going to be a lot of drunk, naked people out there.
Well, thanks a lot, and I hope wish you guys all the best success, and thanks for stopping by.
Thanks. Have a great night, everyone.
Good night. Oh, my God. I